The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed in the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The following program is for informational and educational purposes only. This program does not replace medical, mental health, or psychological diagnosis and treatment prescribed by your personal physician, psychologist, therapist, or other healthcare provider. Please consult your provider for diagnosis and care before beginning or changing any program or idea discussed. Welcome to Child Psych Central with your host, Dr. Beth Onofrack. Effective parenting is all about understanding your child and responding with compassionate competence. On today's show, we'll focus on explanations, solutions, and resources designed to help you understand why young children think and behave the way they do. Now, here is Dr. Beth Onofrack.
Welcome to Child Psych Central, Discover the Kid Brain, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We discuss mental health matters of today's young children. Each week, we demystify child development and the kid brain as we discuss child conditions, issues, and services. I'm your host, Dr. Beth Onofrack. I'm a practicing clinical child psychologist in Phoenix, Arizona. You can reach me at my website, drbethkids.com, my blog, A Child in Mind, on WordPress, on Facebook, and on Twitter. And please email me your thoughts today at radio@drbethkids.com. Today, we're talking about a subject that falls under services, and that is, in particular, speech services. Now, many parents think that speech therapy is just for stuttering or for late talkers or for pronunciation problems, but those elements are really just the tip of the iceberg of speech and language services. Speech and language are complex processes in the child's developing brain that govern not only the child's production of words, but their understanding of words spoken to them, not to mention the constant and very significant judgments about when and how to say things. When speech and language processes are not running smoothly, children's social development can really suffer. So today's episode will shed light on the multifaceted nature of speech and explain the notion of social thinking, where social skills are born. My guest today is Anita Werner, who founded Pediatric Speech and Language Specialists. She has over 35 years of extensive clinical experience. Anita is widely recognized for her comprehensive work evaluating and treating a wide range of speech, language, social communication, and learning challenges in children and adolescents. With degrees from Arizona State University and Southern Methodist University, Anita is a frequent lecturer and consultant supporting teachers and interfacing with pediatricians and other professionals. Anita delivers a unique service called social thinking groups in her very well-known practice. She is regularly consulted by other professionals and school districts working with children with social challenges. And she's also the co-owner of Lexis Preparatory School in Scottsdale, Arizona. You can find Anita at pediatricspeech.net. Is that the correct web address?
Yes, it is.
Anita Werner, welcome to Child Psych Central.
Thank you so much for having me today, Dr. Beth.
It is a real pleasure. Anita is just an icon here in the Valley of the Sun in the greater Phoenix metro area. Just such a seasoned and respected professional. You're really a luminary out there. So it's my honor to have you with us to share really quality information with our listeners today.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'd like to open up, Anita, by just pondering here that parents usually think of speech pathologists working with kids on their R's and their W's or their S sounds. But I'd really love our listeners to learn more about the scope, the broader scope of what speech pathologists do. And I'd love to start with the concept of expressive language. Would you tell us kind of what that means?
Sure. It's your ability to explain and describe, to share your thoughts and your beliefs with others. So many children have such a challenge using language to explain their thoughts and ideas. And I know you see that in the context of the work you do, those children that are really struggling to share what their challenge is. But kids that have expressive language problems may have difficulty with vocabulary. They may have word retrieval problems. So they know what the word is, but they just can't find the word that actually says what they're thinking. So the thought is in their brain, but they're not able to get it out. They may know that that's a cup, but when it comes to using the word cup, they can't retrieve it. Mm-hmm. Some children have difficulty with language formulation. So they have difficulty getting their thoughts out. They may start, they may restart. It's just retrieving that whole sentence and getting it out in a nice, fluent way. So they may have word retrieval problems that are challenging them. It may be the grammar or the syntax that they're trying to use. There are so many challenges for kids with expressive language difficulties.
Yes, and syntax, for those who might not use that word every day, is the order of words in a sentence.
Exactly.
And I would say, Anita, I am glad you're here today. Not Anita, here, glad I am today, you. To mix that up
right.
To a pretty extreme degree.
Right.
But I do hear children in my care who output some kind of strange sentences from time to time. And I always jot those down quickly. And I try to remember as best I can how it came out so that I can say that back to the parent and say, is this a kind of a typical thing that may come out of your child's mouth, or is this mm-hmm. the only time that a sentence has gotten garbled up this way?
Right.
And they kind of let me know. When you talk about expressive language as not only sharing a sentence, but a thought or a belief or a feeling, it reminds me of kids who are in the throes of intense emotion. Mm-hmm. Young children I work with primarily, they're using their hands to mm-hmm. express their feelings. And the grown-ups are always saying, use your words. Well, I'd like to ask a speech pathologist here across the table from me, I don't think it's always quite so easy to just use your words.
No, it's not that easy. So much goes into using your words. The child has to know the vocabulary to be able to use it. They have to be able to express that thought and idea. And sometimes it's not that they don't have the words, but it's getting those words out at the right time. It's that millisecond that they have to retrieve that information in that I talk, you talk, I talk, you talk. The breakdown occurs because they can't get their thoughts out fast enough.
Mm-hmm. So when adults are commanding children to use their words, they're probably not thinking about what a complex process that is with so many steps inside the young developing brain.
I think that's true. I think that for us, I think it's important to say use your words versus being physical mm-hmm. or versus withdrawing and not saying anything. But sometimes children need a model. So it would be helpful for the parent to provide the words for them. And at moments when it's difficult for them to find those words. So just match the words that the child needs for the situation. Model those words.
Mm-hmm.
So if the child is having a hard time saying, stop it, that's my book, then the parent should provide that model for them. And then the child can repeat it if they so want to or if they can.
Yes, it would be pretty silly if an adult were to say, walk that tightrope between those two skyscrapers, please. You know, we would know that required a lot of skill.
Right.
But I think because speech comes along so quickly in young children, they gain competence at such a rapid-fire pace. I think that adults can easily overestimate underestimate how difficult it is to use speech at critical times, especially when there is emotion overflow.
Exactly.
Yes. You have been introducing us to the idea of expressive language, children outputting words that other people can hear. But the kind of flip side of the coin, I know, is a concept called receptive language. I'd love you to explain that to our listeners, please.
Sure. Receptive language is the child's ability to understand or receive information. Some children have difficulty processing information or sentences or words that you use as they get longer. Other children have difficulty understanding the grammar and syntax. So a sentence that would be simple would be maybe the cat is eating, but you get more complex with grammar and syntax with sentences such as she showed the dog the cat. It's a much more complex grammatical structure, and some children can't process the underlying grammar and syntax that is used as they're listening to what parents and others are saying. Then there are some children that have difficulty as the information gets longer with more critical elements of information. So by that I mean, if I said touch the red block, it's a simple sentence with just color and shape. But if I said touch the small red block and the large green square, oh, we've got two stage command and lots of elements, size, shape, color. So as the information increases in complexity, they just don't process. And that affects their ability to understand others and their ability also to express themselves. Because you cannot express what you don't understand.
You cannot express what you don't understand. That's pretty profound. Backing up a moment, you were just using some sample sentences such as, you know, touch the small green this before you touch the, you know, the blue shaped that. Mm-hmm. Those are not everyday commands. Those sound like assessment questions that you might give during a speech eval.
That's true. That's true. But it translates into everyday speech when we say, okay, after you go get your big red book, then I need you to come in the kitchen and sit down at the table. And so do they process the big red book?
Yes. Yes.
And it depends on the child's age and their developmental level as to what we expect from them in terms of their understanding.
And this is making me think, Anita, about the vast majority of parents who come to me with the he's not listening complaint, which can mean so many things, but it often means I've given a direction and my child has not carried out my direction. It sounds to me like receptive language could potentially be one of the obstacles in that equation.
It often is. When parents bring their children in or when pediatricians or psychologists refer their children, we assess to determine where is the breakdown in their understanding. Is it attending? Is it that they don't understand the language? What is causing that child so much difficulty in terms of following through on the teacher's directions or their parents' directions?
I've many times said, you know, I should have just gone to work for the FBI if I wanted to solve mysteries like this. And I'm imagining probably feel the same, trying to figure out what is the particular reason why this child is not able to follow through. And you're looking through the speech and language lens, if you will, to,
absolutely,
to see how that is. Wow. Expressive language is what children say. Receptive language is them receiving language that they've been hearing, and they are different kinds of things. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I would like Anita Werner to tell us about some red flags that parents might notice that may not be obvious cues that their child is struggling in a way that speech therapy could possibly help. You can find my guest, Anita Werner, at pediatricspeech.net. You can find me at drbethkids.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Your life, your health, your network. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Tune into the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Biohacking for Health is working with your individual biology to gain access to and control over the systems within your body. It allows you to explore your biology and improve health and wellness. Each of us has unique genetic profiles and physiology that require individualized approaches. On Biohacking for Optimal Health, Dr. Daniel Stickler and his expert guests provide a roadmap to navigate the world of biohacking human potential. Tune in every Thursday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Follow the Voice America Talk Radio Network on Twitter. We're at Voice America TRN. You'll get the latest fix on what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and general happenings that you should know about at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Now you don't have to miss anything when you're away from your home or office. Just go to twitter.com/Voice America TRN or follow along with us at Voice America TRN, the Voice America Talk Radio Network. We're on the cutting edge of social media. Can you keep up?
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Child Psych Central. To find out more about this groundbreaking program, please visit Dr. Beth's website at drbethkids.com. That's drbethkids.com. Now, back to Child Psych Central. Discover the kid brain.
Welcome back to Child Psych Central. I'm Dr. Beth Onifrak. Please visit me at drbethkids.com, where you can find more information about this radio program, my clinical services, my media content, and my parent workshops. I'd like to take a moment to mention an event that's coming up in the Greater Phoenix area. On February 20th and 21st, the Arizona Association for Play Therapy, AZAPT, is holding its 20th annual conference. Please check out that conference detail at azapt.org for registration details. This conference is about autism, and parents are welcome in addition to providers. And I go every year, so I will be there. I'm back with my guest, Anita Werner, who is a speech therapist, speech and language pathologist, and her business is pediatric speech and language specialists. We have been talking about expressive and receptive language, and I'd like to continue by asking Anita about some signs that a child is struggling in the speech domain in some ways that may not necessarily be obvious to a parent. For instance, I think if a child is stuttering, a parent can say, oh, yes, I think we really need to get some help. Or if the child's speech is very hard to understand by others and only the family can discern things, that's pretty clear. But I'm wondering if you can tell me about some other things, Anita, that parents may want to look for.
Sure. Sometimes children have difficulty with telling stories and relating a personal event. They can't tell you what happened at school. There are other times that children have difficulty asking questions and answering questions. As I told you about before, that I talk, you talk interaction, some children just talk at you and they don't really talk with you. And if they're talking at you, sometimes that child has a difficult time processing language, or they may have difficulty with social communication. And social communication is that ability to interact with someone, to be able to read their nonverbal cues, to be able to understand the intent with which they're delivering the message. It's their ability to link what they just said to what the person they were speaking to was talking about, taking that perspective of another and just not being about me. It's not, the world is not a just me kind of world. When you're interacting with others, you have to take their perspective, and you have to understand that if I say something that is unexpected, you may have uncomfortable thoughts about what I said.
Yes, like children in the grocery store just say, "Mom, she's fat," or things like that.
Exactly, exactly. They're not able yet to take the perspective of others.
It sounds, Anita, like you're talking about not just particulars of pronouncing a certain word right or putting a sentence together. You're talking about the larger like art of a conversation. And is a child grasping how conversations go?
Exactly. Communication is conversations. And conversations are the beginning and foundation for social relationships. If you can't have a conversation with someone, it's so very hard to develop friendships. And if you can get that friendship to develop, it's aspects of perspective taking and being able to share your points of view with others, but also to take their point of view and understand where they're coming from, that helps that friendship cultivate and grow.
Yes. And as you talk about this, I'm pondering that before words come out of a child's mouth, they're selecting from the universe of words that they know, and they're pulling that together into a potential sentence, but then there's a lot of judgments that go along with that. What a complex process.
It is a complex process because you start with that toddler that at 2 years of age you hope that they have approximately 200 words, and they're beginning to put those words together, and they're not quite ready for conversation, but they are definitely sharing their thoughts and ideas. But as they get to be a three-year-old, you're really expecting that back and forth conversation to begin to develop and flourish. So for our very young children, we're expecting quite a bit in terms of their communication. We expect two-year-olds to be able to call attention by saying, "Hey, look." We expect them to be able to comment on others by saying, "Wow, that's awesome," or "That's great." We expect them to be able to protest, which they often do quite well. We expect them to be able to request. There's so many aspects for which very young children communicate that are the beginnings of social communication.
We're expecting please and thank you and hello and goodbye. Children are leaving my office and parents are saying, "And what do we say to Dr. Beth?" The kids are like, "I don't know." But where the expectation is very clear there in the parents' request.
Right. And the parents can cue them. But there are those children that even when cued, they don't really know what to do. And they may absolutely have some expressive language delays.
Yes. I wonder if some of those children may be mistakenly taken for being rude if they don't have those words right at their disposal, those social communication tools ready to go.
Oh, that is so often true. Children that have behavior problems are often seen as being defiant and purposely defiant when it is not in their heart to be defiant. They just don't have the language for the situation. Even yesterday, I had a child I finished evaluating, and in talking with the mother, she said the teacher was saying how her child's behavior was inappropriate in the classroom and how she didn't really express herself when she was called upon. She refused to talk. It wasn't that she was refusing to talk. She didn't really have the expressive language skills to share at that moment in time when called upon. Very, very sweet little girl who really, people are beginning to think it's her behavior when it's really not her behavior. She's significantly impaired in her language skills.
Mm-hmm. The assumption that the child was refusing to talk, mm-hmm, is a mistaken assumption in that particular context.
Mm-hmm.
And the rudeness, children often literally don't have those words. And I'm also thinking, back just a moment to what you said in the beginning of the segment, that children may have trouble narrating what happened at school. But kids' parents are often thinking, "Ah, he won't tell me."
That's right.
And won't and can't are pretty different things.
They are. And I often say to parents that when children have delays and they're young, three things can happen. One, they can become very physical. Two, they can withdraw. Or three, you can see a combination of both, but it depends on the situation. At home, they may be more physical in their communication, but in school they may not be, or it could be vice versa, especially for a preschool child. As they get older, it is sometimes thought that children that are acting out in school are behavioral, when really they just don't have the language to negotiate the situation. It takes a lot of language for negotiation. And the older child that's in elementary or middle school, if they don't have very good control of their expressive language, if it's not age appropriate, they may have significant difficulty communicating those thoughts and negotiating, particularly in emotional times when they're having difficult moments with a peer.
Negotiating. Like, give me that, you're mean. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Or problem solving, solving a problem. If you're in middle school or high school and you're trying to solve a problem, it should be solved verbally and not physically. And so many children aren't really able to speak their thoughts and say what they're thinking. And it can be because they don't have the language or because they're not assertive enough. There are a lot of factors that go into that lack of being able to problem solve a situation.
Yes. I'm thinking of many parents who present these challenges to me, and they're certainly thinking that it's behavioral, and they're possibly expecting me to do something along the line of consequences or teaching them social skills or something like that. I have learned along the way as a provider that I can give my best services when I keep my eye out open for what other services a child might need. When I hear a glimmer of speech challenges, I ask myself, is a speech and language evaluation warranted here? I'm thinking in particular of some children I've seen lately who have a lot of trouble narrating their experiences and talking about their day. And their parents are really wishing they could have a better connection with their child. And they're thinking of it on emotional lines. And I'm beginning to think about, do we have an underlying speech and language problem here? One thing I would like to advise the listeners here today is that if you have a child who is in mental health care, and something about this episode today is ringing some bells with you, take this podcast to your provider and just let them listen to what you've been hearing and talk with that provider together about whether another person maybe could be brought onto the team, is how I put it, meaning whether a speech and language evaluation could be a helpful thing. You know, we have just about 2 minutes or so before we go into a break, Anita. But I wanted to ask you, speech and language problems probably also affect a child's learning ability at school. If you could say a few things about that.
Sure. We take in information through listening and also through reading. We output information through speaking, but also through writing. So reading and writing are the academic forms of language. And all of these children who have reading and writing problems really should be evaluated for an underlying language problem.
That is really important information.
It is, because it makes a very big difference in how they're treated. If you get to the underlying problem, you can fix that reading problem. You can fix that writing problem.
Wow. Very powerful information. And all of this seems to suggest that children need more than a second look, more than a third look, when we make an initial assumption of what's going on. and that it's really worth it to look deeper and to pay attention to the small things as a parent that you may be noticing and bring those up with a provider, because it may generate an idea to add a speech and language evaluation to your child's care. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, Anita Warner is going to tell us about a very unique service she offers through her practice about social communication skills. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
A show about eye care on internet radio? Absolutely. Tune in to Vision Talk Radio with Dr. Bob. Your host, Dr. Bob Rothbart, is the answer man when it comes to your vision health. He and his guest experts will discuss all of the aspects of your eyes and how to keep them at their best for your entire life. There's a lot more to good vision than 20/20. Tune in to Vision Talk Radio with Dr. Bob, live every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. By listening, we'll help you see. Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog, Press Pass? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective, plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite host. It's just a click away at vapresspass.com. That's vapresspass.com. VA Press Pass by Voice America. All access, all the time.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Child Psych Central. To find out more about this groundbreaking program, please visit Dr. Beth's website at drbethkids.com. That's drbethkids.com. Now, back to Child Psych Central. Discover the kid brain.
Welcome back to Child Psych Central. I'm your host, Dr. Beth Onofrack. If you're in the greater Phoenix area, you can hear me speak at Lexus Preparatory School on Friday, February 27th. My topic will be Constructive Behavior Solutions, Building a Spirit of Cooperation in Young Kids. You can check that out at lexisprep.com, L-E-X-I-S. And if you attend, you will probably also meet Anita Warner there, as she is the co-owner of that very special school. Anita, we've been talking about expressive language, receptive language, the complexity of brain functioning that underlies what appear to be just the simplest of sentences, but that carry such significance for a child's social success or a child's social failure or a child's connecting or a child not connecting. I have really enjoyed referring folks to you, not only for evaluation, but also for treatment, because I know that you offer very special service there at your place called social thinking groups. And I would love you to explain to our listeners a bit about how that can help your kids, not only with speech, but with their social lives.
Sure. The concept of social thinking was developed by Michelle Garcia Winner, who's a speech pathologist out of the Bay Area. And Michelle was working with individuals and noting that even though their skills may look fine on paper, they're still having problems interacting with each other. And so she developed the concept of social thinking, and I've been working with Michelle and studying with her, and I've learned so much. It's really opened my eyes as a speech language pathologist. Yes, we see kids for all sorts of challenges, but when it's all said and done, your success in life really boils down to how socially successful you are. If you're a very social person, then you're going to do better in your job. I have kids come in, they may be in middle school, and they're saying, I don't need help, I'm okay, I'm going to be a veterinarian, I don't need to talk to people, I can, I'm going to work with dogs and cats. And I'll go, but wait a minute, who owns the dog and cat? You've got to, they have owners. You have to be able to really have good communication skills, or the owners won't want to bring you their dogs or cats. Or you get high school students that come in and they are, at that point, they're a little more needy, but some will say, I don't know, I'm going to be an engineer. I really don't need to have good communication skills. And I stop them and I say, you know what? Engineers work on teams. You've got to be a good member of that team, and you've got to have good communication skills to interact with others. So social communication is needed at all ages, and the social thinking groups that we do from preschool all the way through college. I had a college group I met with last night. But with the younger children, we're teaching them things like whole body listening. You listen with your ears. We all know that. But you also listen with your eyes. You have to watch what the person is doing. You listen with your heart. You connect to what they're saying. You need to keep your hands and your feet still when you're a preschooler to show the person that's speaking that you're listening. So you have to listen with your whole body. We're teaching kids that they have to keep their brain in the group. That means you have to think about what that person is saying, but your body has to be in the group too. When preschoolers are sitting in circle time, they can't have their bodies facing the other way from the person who's speaking. We want to teach kids that they have to be flexible thinkers. It's not all about them. It's also about others. You have to consider their points of view. As they get older, we want them to understand that there are nuances to different situations, that you have to really be able to follow the hidden rules of the situation. So when I walk in a bookstore, I need to be able to look at the store and see what are the rules for my behavior in this store. Can I scream across the store to my friend, or do I have to whisper because that's the hidden rule in the bookstore? We also teach kids that you need to wonder about what the other person is saying. Mm. If you have a sense of wonder, you will ask questions. You will be able to engage that person in conversation. And conversation is so critical to your social interaction. And we want them to be able to look at the situation and read the body language of the person they're speaking to know, are they interested? Are they done with what you're saying? Where can this conversation go? And children have a hard time, particularly those that don't intuitively have social cognitive skills or social understanding. Children perhaps with communication disorders, with nonverbal learning disabilities, children that have attention deficit disorder, Asperger's syndrome, autism spectrum disorders, they don't intuitively have good social communication skills, and so we need to teach them these skills. But it's about getting them to understand that we all see things differently from a different perspective, and you need to be able to have that give and take with that person you're interacting with. Last night in the group I had that was a college-age group, we were in conversation and we were filming each other and looking at the body language that we were using and how if you have crossed arms and you have crossed feet, you know, when you're sitting in a chair, crossed legs, what is that communicating? You're communicating that you're not open to another person joining your conversation, or you're too busy. You know, the child who, or the young person who's sitting there and tapping their foot incessantly, does that communicate something? It does. It communicates that perhaps they're anxious and they want to get moving along. And so our body language is critical to our interactions with others.
All these aspects of social communication, you know, the listeners might be thinking, wait a minute. I thought this was a show about speech therapy, because suddenly we've shifted and we're talking about all these other nuances of social skills. And this is how I finally got it for the number of times that I read social thinking in your materials. And I want to check this out with you, Anita. Is it as if the speech that comes out of the child's mouth is the last thing in a long chain of their thinking and their assessment beforehand about the situation and what words they could use or not use? And if that long pre-chain, if you will, of thoughts and assessments is socially attuned, then the speech that comes out is conversation-friendly and facilitative. And if it's not, they're social bloopers, there's disconnects and unsuccess.
You're right. That's exactly it. I mean, the communication, those language skills that we spoke about before, those are the skills that we need to enter social communication with. Social thinking is that thought prior to the actual doing of or the social skills that other people see. So social thinking is really all of that that happens prior to the doing. You have to understand that it's not appropriate to blurt. Mm-hmm. In a classroom situation, you have to be able to read the plan of the group to know what is the group doing. If everyone's sitting in a chair, can I sit in front of my chair on the floor? Some kids do, and we have to say, oh, look, read the plan. What's the group doing? And then when you do that, what kind of thoughts are others having about you?
I'm thinking about a child in school. She would be a composite of about 150 kids over the last 20 years, who has a problem not remembering to raise her hand and just blurting out in class. And parents or teachers might be thinking, well, we need to kind of consequence that. She gets a mark or something if she, you know, when she blurts out, or she doesn't get recess if she blurts out too many times. But you're talking about approaching blurting in a teaching way, about the child's underlying ability to read the situation and decide, is this speech appropriate in this manner and in this moment?
Exactly. So many of those behaviors that we see as being negative behaviors are really opportunities for teachable moments with children. If you're someone who's blurting, you may not understand that there are other children in the class. You're being a just-me kind of a kid, thinking only about yourself and taking things from your perspective. But others need a chance to take a turn in the classroom as well. There's so many different underlying thoughts that go into why is that child blurting? Do they not care about the others? Is it that they don't understand and there's an impulsivity that's underlying that? But all of these behaviors are about communication. They're about how are you communicating? Are you communicating in a socially appropriate way? And what you're doing, if you're doing something that's unexpected like blurting, others are going to have thoughts about you. And you mm-hmm. want others to have good thoughts about you. You want, for the most part, you do.
Yes.
And if you do things that are appropriate, then your peers will have good thoughts about you. If you do things that are expected, they'll have good thoughts about you.
It's a completely different approach to helping a child who's not using speech and language appropriately, instead of just saying, we don't blurt out, and that's rude. There's no teaching element in those responses to a child, and we are talking about a developing, learning brain. So I really love your emphasis here, Anita, on those, quote, behavior problem moments being teachable moments, moments for helping the child start to see things in a different way, not just get a slap.
Right. Exactly.
Verbal or otherwise. Oh, boy. You run such a wide variety of groups that after we come back from a break, I would love it if you could tell us, just kind of give us some capsules, if you will, of what happens in a preschool communication group that is different from what happens in your college-level groups, and to tell our listeners a bit more about how we can reach you and find you here in the greater Phoenix area. And also, just for people who are listening in other states or in other countries, to be able to just ponder a bit more about if speech and language services could help a young child that you care about. We'll be back after just a short break. Stay with us.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Transformational healing includes energy medicine as well as hands-on healing. Tune in every week to Transformational Healing with Dr. Bonnie Morrow. If you want to know more about the business and science of energy fields, chakras, and the medical and spiritual community, join our expert guests as we work together to bring you closer to your personal health vision. Transformational Healing is heard live every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the Internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Child Psych Central. To find out more about this groundbreaking program, please visit Dr. Beth's website at drbethkids.com. That's drbethkids.com. Now, back to Child Psych Central. Discover the kid brain.
Welcome back to Child Psych Central. I'm your host, Dr. Beth Onofrack, and I've been enjoying a wonderful conversation today with Anita Werner of Pediatric Speech and Language Specialists here in Phoenix, Arizona. And we have moved in our talk from kind of the basics of speech and language therapy into the kind of speech therapy that can help with children's social communication. And, oh, I'd say every quarter or so, I get a wonderful packet from Anita Werner's group about the wide number of programs that they offer, including a summer program called Camp Talk A Lot. And, Anita, I'd like you to just tell us some more here in our final segment about if a child of varying ages enrolled in any of these groups you have, what sorts of things that child would do and learn in each group.
Sure. Since you mentioned Camp Talk A Lot, I'll tell you a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
Camp Talk A Lot came out of parents asking us to do a more intense experience in the area of social communication. We did our weekly groups, and parents got together and said, oh, you've got to help us. Do a camp for us. And we started by offering a camp at a preschool location, and it was all based on social. So the children come in. The concept is when they walk in the door, if they have other speech and language problems, for example, problems with their articulation, pronouncing their words, we're going to leave that at the door. We're not going to worry about that. In the context of Camp Talk A Lot, we're going to worry about the very youngest children, the three-year-olds, using their words to communicating with their peers. We're going to prompt them. We're going to begin to fade as they're getting more successful in their interactions with others. And we'll seed some basic social thinking concepts, such as whole-body listening. As the child gets older, we have Camp Talk A Lot is for kids all the way up to 12 years of age. We're doing much more complex things. We're videotaping them. We're showing them what they look like in their interactions with others. We're asking them, what did you like about what you did? What would you like to improve upon in this segment? If we were going to do a redo on this, what would you like to improve on? We're teaching them all of the social thinking vocabulary because that helps us pinpoint concepts that are very hard for them to grasp. And so if I can talk to them about a social fake, which is what we do when we're not interested in what someone else is saying, we're still responsible for nodding our head and making comments, saying, uh-huh, and oh my. Even if you're not interested, if you value that relationship with someone else, you need to be able to be a social fake. And so there's a time and a place for that, too, when the older kids are ready to learn that. So we're teaching them all these concepts in a camp environment because this year we'll be at Lexus Preparatory School, but we have water slides and we have jumping machines, and it's really designed to be fun. It's not designed to be a therapy group. Camp Talk A Lot is a fun experience where the kids come for a day camp experience.
That sounds fantastic. And I know that the children in my care have benefited a great deal from the Camp Talk A Lot and in that experience in combination with your other social thinking groups as well. About the social fake, I do love that. I'm thinking of a pretty important one is when kids are given a birthday present or something,
yes,
and they already had one or that's not what they wanted. And good moment to know how to do a a social thank. Oh, thanks.
Exactly.
Wow. From preschool all the way up to college for these social communication groups that you have, that's got to cover some very different territory from where those kids are at developmentally and the kind of social experiences that they're trying to excel in. Can you tell us a bit, for instance, about a middle school social skills group?
Oh, middle school social groups are fun. And you never know who's going to show up. We try to match our kids in terms of having like developmental skills. So every child that would come to a social communication, social thinking group in my practice would go through an interview. And in that interview, we are trying to find out where their language skills are, where is their level of perspective taking, and do they have any behaviors that we would have to monitor for in the context of a group. And we put groups together where we think the dynamics of interaction are going to be positive. And so if I have someone who doesn't fit in a group, I would rather not have them join the group because it's not in their best interest. And it's all about what's going to make a difference for this child? How can we best help them to improve their social communication and social thinking skills? So the groups are very different, and I have different groups at for different, you could have four middle school groups, and they're very different. Mm-hmm. One group might have more anxiety, and that's how we've put them together because they seem to have a lot of anxiety as they approach different communication situations. Another group may be not monitoring others and taking the perspective of the listener when they're speaking. So we try to match our groups as best we can, which is really hard on parents because, aww, you know, they may have only Monday night at 4 o'clock or Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock, but the group that's best for their child is Thursday at 4 o'clock. So we try to explain how important that the dynamics are to their child's progress.
That is a lot of personalization and customization that I hear in your assembling the groups to make sure that they're with other kids who are kind of struggling in similar ways that they are.
That's right. I mean, it's important that we put children together because just knowing that somebody else is struggling in a similar way can be incredibly helpful. To know that you're not the only one who's having this problem gives them a sense of it's not just me. I'm not the only one like this.
Yes. As we start to draw our program to a close for today, Anita, I just want to highlight that the phrase you and I have been using a lot today called social thinking, that is kind of a trademark phrase. That's not just two words put together by yourself there. And I'm wondering if other folks who are listening in different states here in the country or across the world, where could they find out more about social thinking as created by, just want to make sure I have the name right here of the creator, Michelle Garcia Winner?
Exactly. And I recommend highly her books. I recommend her website. It's socialthinking.com. Mm-hmm. I think that Michelle has a wonderful array of materials that are helpful. There are social thinking providers across the world in many, many countries across the world. And it is very easy to find someone who does social thinking work in your own community. Mm-hmm. Just go to socialthinking.com, go to the professionals list, and you will be able to look up someone in your area that provides social thinking therapy.
And how forward-thinking of you to blend that into your established practice of speech and language services and to extend the benefit that you can provide to young children and all the way up the scale to college-level students as well. That is great. Anita, I'd like you to just take us out by letting us know specifically how we could reach you or if folks wanted to send you a question, how could they email you?
Sure. My practice is in Scottsdale and also in Chandler, Arizona, and I can be reached at psls@att.net. That's our email, or our website, pediatricspeech.net, and our phone number, 480-991-6560. You can reach me anytime.
That sounds great. And her website has a lot of resources on there that can be really helpful. I'm so hoping that our program today, Anita, helped give parents a new perspective on some challenges they've been seeing in their child to introduce an additional question to them of, might speech and language problems be at the bottom of what's going on? I'm so grateful that you could be with us today on the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun.
It has indeed been a lot of fun. And perhaps we'll have you back again someday, because clearly this is an endless topic. Next week, my guest is going to be Bonnie Doherty, who is the head of school at Lexis Preparatory School. And she will be talking with us about special services that are offered there. Our beautiful theme music is composed and performed by Zachary Bruno at ZacharyBrunoMusic.com. I'm your host, Dr. Beth Onifrak. Be sure to connect with me on my website, DrBethKids.com, my blog, A Child in Mind, and you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. You've been listening to Child Psych Central, Discover the Kid Brain. I hope you've gained some new ideas today. And remember, the smallest change can make a world of difference in the life of a child. Catch you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to Child Psych Central, Discover the Kid Brain. Please join Dr. Beth Onifrak for another edition of our program next Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time and 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We hope you and your family will have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.